The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Powered by WrestleZone. It's Total Engagement with Matt Coon on the MLW Radio Network. This is the theme to my new show. The theme to my new show. Corp Power called me up and said that I can have my own thing. It's almost halfway finished. How do you like it so far? How do you like the theme to my new show? Total Engagement.
And welcome to Total Engagement with Matt Coon on the MLW Radio Network, sponsored by and partnered with WrestleZone.com. I'm Matt Coon. You can reach me at Matt Coon Music on Twitter. And I am like you. I'm a fan. I definitely don't know what the heck I am doing here, but I'm glad to be here talking to all of you. And I'm glad so many of you guys tuned in last week to our episode with Conrad Thompson and Jim Johnston and Brian Pillman Jr. And people are loving the interviews. So we're going to go forth with those a little bit. I enjoy interviewing people. And I think people like hearing an interview from a fan's perspective, especially a fan who doesn't just read off of a Wikipedia page. A matter of fact, an interesting thing for those of you who want to get into podcasting is three of the guests that I've interviewed said to me specifically, thank you for not just reading off a Wikipedia page. So maybe that's a little pro tip for you. And speaking of pro tips, we got tons of pro tips coming up later from Conrad Thompson. Something about Conrad is once you get him talking, he can go and go and go. And he starts talking a lot about how to make a successful podcast. And for those of you who know Conrad's track record, he's kind of the guy to listen to. We also go into some kind of personal stuff about why I got booted out of a group chat. Or I guess why I quit a group chat. And what an ECW original has to do with it. Also coming up this episode, we have David Finley. Now, David, if you don't know who David Finley is, you're going to know who David Finley is. Kid is 25 years old. He's a fourth generation wrestler. Of course, you know his dad, Fit Finley, the Belfast Bruiser. But he has already been making a mark in New Japan for the last couple years. And I enjoyed interviewing him and I enjoyed meeting him when I did meet him in Charlotte a couple months ago. But I'm not so sure he was ready for an interview. You see, David was doing awesome in New Japan. Like he's really doing well and he's going to continue to do well. Like I said, he's young. He's probably going to be a world champion one day, but he has just found out a couple days ago that he's going to be out for several months because he tore his labrum, which is in his shoulder. His shoulder popped out in a match against the Briscoes. It popped back in, tore it. And I don't even think he's got that wrapped around his head yet. You be the judge for yourself. Super nice guy. Couldn't have been friendlier to Matthew. Couldn't have been friendlier to me when we met. And that's coming up in this episode as well, as well as maybe a couple rants. So let's go ahead and get started with Total Engagement with Matt Coon. That's me, by the way. Total Engagement. So before we get started with the interviews, just a couple news items and then maybe a little feature for you. The first news item is Christopher Simon in Texas. I think it's Netherlands, Texas. I think something like that. You still owe me $450, brother. If you guys aren't hip to the story yet, Matt Coon, me, got ripped off by a con artist, a scammer, a loser, I believe. Christopher Simon, who was on Twitter at History of Wrestling, which is at History of Rest. Don't look for it. It's not there. He ran after taking me and a dozen other people's money. Now, some of the money has come back to some people, but PayPal is not letting me launch a refund attempt or anything. So I'm going to have to get him on the phone. And I've emailed him. He's emailed me back. He's saying PayPal will pay you back. But dude, you stole the money. Pay me back. Give me my money.
Total Engagement.
My friend, Robbie E., Robert Strauss, announced that he was signed by the Performance Center. No, I did not know. And yes, I'm glad he didn't tell me because I wouldn't be able to keep my mouth shut because I'd be so happy for the guy. He's worked so long. I thought it was kind of weird he decided to leave Wyatt ended the way he did. I just thought he didn't realize what was involved in a podcast. But I guess that's why he left. I guess he had to have known. And it was reported this week. Well, I mean, they took pictures of him in the Performance Center. So he is there. He is in NXT. He is at WWE. That is awesome to me. Total engagement. And you know, Robbie and I did a lot of great interviews for Why It Ended. And it really was about people who saw the spotlight and then it ended. But I'm trying to get a lot of people on the other side of that on this show. For instance, we had Tom Lawlor on. We've had Brian Pillman Jr. on. We've had Joey Ryan on. And now we have David Finley. David Finley, as I said earlier, awesome guy, big future, young pedigree, fourth generation wrestler from the Finley family. He's with New Japan Pro Wrestling, but he just got hurt when it seemed like he was on the cusp of greatness. Check it out and make sure to follow him and make sure to root this guy on, because you might want to get on this bandwagon early. Coming up now on Total Engagement, David Finley. Total Engagement. Well, joining us, guys, right now is a fourth generation wrestler. You've all heard the name Finley, and we are joined by one of the bright young stars of New Japan Pro Wrestling, as well as Ring of Honor, Dave Finley. David, how you doing today, man?
I'm good, man. What's up?
Not too much. How is the shoulder doing?
The shoulder is not doing good. I'm getting it repaired on the 27th. So I'm just kind of stuck in limbo right now, but no complaints, really.
And it got dislocated in a match against the Briscoes, a tag match, and you had to pull out of the tournament. And it turns out, I guess Meltzer reported it's going to be about 6 months before you're back in the ring. Is that right?
Well, I haven't been told that yet, so we'll see.
So where are you at right now with all that? Because it seemed like, you know, you were being set up in the tournament to probably do pretty well. You had some high-profile matches, and now with the injury, where's your mindset at right now?
Well, the next, if it is 6 months, the next 6 months would have been a very important 6 months in my career, I think. So there's I don't know. Like, I'm kind of at a mental crossroads of, like, this could be a good thing, you know, depending on how I spin it, and it could be a bad thing. So only time will tell.
Now, I've been watching a bit about your family. I didn't realize you were a fourth-generation wrestler. Your great-grandfather was a wrestler, your grandfather, and, of course, your dad. Was there anything you were going to be besides a wrestler growing up?
No. But it's actually what I wanted to do, though. It's the only thing I can ever remember wanting to do. Maybe it's because that's the only job I thought was available growing up, because my entire family had done it. But this is what I've always dreamed of doing. Like, this is my passion, my, you know, what I want to do with my life. So,
and you've been
totally natural.
And you've been getting in a ring since you were young. I saw on YouTube there's a movie called The Fit Finleys, and there's video of you as a very young man in the ring getting tossed around by your father. About how old were you when you got in the wrestling ring the first time?
I think I was either a freshman or a sophomore in high school, so like 15 or 16 years old, probably.
And as far as training, was it pretty much just your dad, or did you have other training?
Well, actually, I didn't really like do pro wrestling training till after I finished high school, because I amateur wrestled when I was in high school, so that's where my focus was. And plus, I think there was some weird, like, rule where I couldn't, even though it's two completely different things, amateur wrestling and professional wrestling, there was some weird law in Georgia where, like, I couldn't do pro wrestling and amateur wrestling. I would have got disqualified from amateur wrestling. So I just kind of put that on pause and just went full blast on amateur wrestling. And then I actually didn't really full on, like, train, like, make it, it didn't become a regular thing until like 2 weeks before I actually debuted, because my dad was like, hey, I think I'm going to retire. Do you want to tag with me? So I was like, oh, yeah, thinking it would never actually happen. And a couple days later, he was like, hey, so we're tagging in Germany. I'm retiring. I was like, Dad, I don't know how to wrestle. I don't have any gear. So I didn't really get in the ring on a regular basis until I was like 19.
And you're still a young man. You're 25 right now?
25, yep.
And your debut was in Germany. You're born in Germany. You're from one of the most famous Irish families, you know, in wrestling history, but you have no accent. You have an American accent. You grew up in America?
I grew up in America. I've been living in Atlanta since I was 4 years old, so I definitely sound American.
And as far as your wrestling influence, though, do you have that same kind of influence from your dad? Or, you know, your dad, I think you were born when your dad was in his mid-30s, so by the time you're 10 years old, you're getting to see your dad on TV and that kind of thing. Were you a fan of other styles of wrestling, or was it pretty much that Finley style that you always wanted to do?
I go by the saying, if it's good, it's good. I like all kinds of wrestling. There's a lot of wrestling that I don't like as well. But as far as like my own personal influence, the only wrestler I could really say I looked up to is my dad. Maybe another one would be Shawn Michaels. But outside of that, I feel like I just kind of figured it out on the go and didn't really try to have an influence. Of course, I'm going to naturally start doing stuff my dad does. But I would say really I'm just my father's son.
Well, I mean, you can't really find two more similar wrestlers than Fit Finley and Shawn Michaels, right?
Completely opposite.
I was watching the video of your dad on YouTube, the Fit Finleys, and your dad tells a story about how when people used to say wrestling was fake, he would just break their thumbs, and he did that a lot when he was younger. What is it like being Fit Finley's kid? According to his own words, and, of course he works for WWE right now, he's calmed down a lot, but what is it like being the son of such a badass?
I'll answer that with a story. So when I was in seventh grade or eighth grade, and they revealed that Hornswoggle was my dad's son, I think it was on like Raw or something.
Yeah.
And mom sat me down the night before and was like, listen, this is what they're going to do on TV. That means kids are going to ask you if he's really your brother. You have to tell them yes. So I got clued in before everybody else. And like, I was made sure like, hey, make sure when kids ask you if that's really your brother, you say yes. So my dad was very, very protective of the wrestling business. And that's kind of how I grew up.
Wow. So do you know Swoggle at all? Have you met him? Have you talked to him about this?
I don't think he knows that story, but I haven't talked to him in years, but I would see him at shows and stuff when I was way, way younger.
Now, I saw you wrestle in 2014 with my son. We saw you at WrestleCade. It was the night before the main show. You just started wrestling. Were you, at that point, did you know you wanted to go to Japan, or were you just trying to get experience? Or where were you at around 2014 when you're doing
I actually remember that. I had just gotten back from being in England for like 5 or 6 months. I was wrestling for Brian Dixon. Came back. That was like one of the only bookings I had. And then I was going to move up to New Jersey. So it was this weird in-between phase over the holidays where like I wasn't really doing anything.
Right. It was Thanksgiving weekend, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I do remember that. I was trying to get into Japan at that point in time. I thought I would already be there because I didn't fully grasp how different New Japan was at that point in time. But at that point in time, I was dead set on like, oh, I'm going to go to the dojo, and was completely oblivious to how difficult it would be.
So, again, as the son of Fit, but as someone who watched wrestling on TV as a kid, how did you get the idea that you wanted to be a New Japan young lion?
I didn't know that I wanted, I knew I wanted to be in New Japan. I didn't know I wanted to be a young lion. I don't think that I ever did. When I was about 15, my dad like sat me down. We talked about wrestling, kind of what my goals were. And I was just like, well, what do you think I should do, Dad? So the plan was go to England for a bit, wrestle there for Brian Dixon, go to the dojo for a bit, and then go to WWE. That was the plan when I was like 15.
As
we got closer to me going to New Japan, I was like, oh, I'm just going to stay here for a while. And, what's the rush? I think I got there when I was like 21 or something, really, really young. So I knew I always wanted to be in New Japan, but once I got there, I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't really know much of anything. And then towards the end of the Best of the Super Juniors, they're like, hey, you're going to be a young lion. I was like, okay, sweet. Now I know what I'm doing. Because as far as I knew, I was only going there for like, from like April to August. And I didn't know anything outside of that. So it was, there was a lot of unknowns. But
right.
I wouldn't change a thing. I'm really happy I got that opportunity. And it really, really helped turn me into who I am.
So when you went there for the tournament, and you were there at the 2015 Battle of the Super Juniors with pretty much everybody, you know, Kyle O'Reilly and Kushida and Bobby Fish and Beretta, Chase Owens, like, you know, and you picked up 0 points, but after the tournament, they told you you're going to be a young lion, and it was something you were glad about because you knew what you were doing at that point?
Yeah. Because, like, literally, I came and I knew I was doing the Super Juniors, but after that, I was like, I don't know if I'm wrestling again. I don't know if I'm going to only be in the dojo. Jay was a young lion. I didn't know if I was going to be a young lion with him. I literally didn't know until like the day before they announced it. They were like, hey, this is what we're going to do with you. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So, which was a natural fit because I was living in the dojo at the time. I was living the young boy life. So it only made sense that it would be a young lion.
Now, I've heard Jay in interviews talk about that dojo experience, that, you know, young boy experience, about even having to go in your rooms when the heels came in. Is there anything you can tell everybody about what that experience is like in New Japan as far as being a young lion?
It is insanity. If you wake up at 8 a.m., you start cleaning, and then, like, if there's time to eat, you eat. There's usually time to eat. You got about an hour to kill because training starts at 10. I would just go back to sleep. I was like, ah, screw eating. I don't care. And then you'd start off with, like, this weird, like, 15-minute warm-up that actually doesn't warm a single thing up. And then you just do, like, you start with squats. I remember I asked Jay, because I'd heard all the horror stories about the squats. I was like, dude, how many have you done?
Right.
He's like, the most I ever did was 500. I was like, all right, I've done that before. I can do that. No problem. So I get in there my first day of training. They say something in Japanese. Mind you, I don't know a word of Japanese at this point. And Tomatsu looks over at me and just goes, 1,000. And I was just like, oh. So I was just going at that. Like, I watched the clock because I didn't know what number we were on. It took 45 minutes of just, like, mindless squatting. And then we continued our workout. So it was a lot of brutal days, but it's a lot of fun times, too.
Well, you're a pretty smart guy, and you're a guy who knows a lot about the business, you know, being raised in it. What do you think the psychology is in that as far as, you know, having you guys do squats and, you know, kind of humbling you? Is it still that old wrestling tradition that's died down in the States a little bit about paying your dues and making sure you're tough enough, or is there more to it than that?
I think it's a little bit of that, but I also think it's just tradition. Like, that's how the first guy, like the first class of New Japan Dojo young boys did that. Probably way harder, way more, but like it's more of a tradition thing than anything. And it does weed out guys that don't really want it. I mean, every class of young boy has somebody that ran away. Like, we had it, the guys after us had it, and they actually the Japanese boys would be like, new young boy, escape. So they don't call it running away, they call it escape. So I like it because it really, there's times where it's like, why am I doing this? Do I really, really want to wrestle that bad? And it's kind of all I'm good at, so I didn't really have a choice. Also, I was like, if I go home, my dad's going to kill me. So I kind of got through it out of fear. Right. But, I mean, it's hard. It's hard.
Yeah, you had more incentive than most, and you had more to lose than most. And really, it was all you were going to do. So you had to do those 1,000 squats or whatever it was, right?
Yeah. And then after a while, you just get used to it, and the number of squats you have to do goes down. But, and I had it way easier than the Japanese boys actually have it. They were way more lenient on me than they probably should have been. They've got it 10 times harder.
Do you think maybe, you got it maybe even a little easier than you would have had it somewhere else because they didn't treat you as fit son as much as you would have been treated like fit son if you were, you know, training in England or training in the States somewhere?
That kind of went out the window when I got there, I feel like. As much as it can, you know, like guys that my dad was good to tended to take a liking to me pretty early on. But I think they expected just as much out of me as everybody else. I don't think I got special treatment there, which I was happy about because I'm highly susceptible to special treatment because of my dad.
With, with becoming, you know, a young lion no more, you know, you start wrestling, you're teaming with Ricochet and you win the, you know, never open weight six man tag team championship. What is it like to turn on the TV and see your old partner Ricochet on Raw?
Well, I actually don't watch Raw, but I know that he is on there, cause I saw it on Twitter, but I think it's cool for him. It's bananas to me. Cause like you said, a few years ago, me and him were teaming. Like, he's my friend. I have his phone number, you know,
right?
I can text him whatever I want. And it's good for him. I know that's what he always wanted.
It's funny. I literally was talking to my son yesterday and we were watching Raw and I'm like, man, it is so weird to see Ricochet on Raw. You know, this is the guy we watched for so long and we all knew about him, but you know, they're bringing a lot of these guys in now and it's almost like there's more opportunities now for someone like him or yourself. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think there's more opportunity now than ever, at least as far as I can look back. I think now is the best time of all time to be a wrestler, I think.
Now, you lost the tag, the six-man tag to the Bullet Club, you know, and of course with the elite guys, the Jacksons and Cody and Hangman and all them, what kind of, you know, for a lot of us stateside, it brought us to New Japan. It really was kind of our entryway into New Japan.
Yeah.
What kind of influence did it have there with those guys? Did it really make an impact there as much as it did here?
No, I think it was way more successful in the States than it was in New, like their stuff. It was way more successful in the States than it was in New Japan. Mainly because they were in the States more, you know, and Japan, it's a Japanese-speaking country, and America, it's an English-speaking country. They were able to connect there better than they were in Japan. But they did great in Japan, too. Like, don't get me wrong. But their market was definitely, definitely America.
When those guys all kind of left, you know, they all lose their matches, you know, in January, to a lot of people in the States, it seemed like, you know, well, that's a big loss to New Japan, but New Japan didn't seem to miss a beat. Was there a sense that you guys had to step it up at all because those guys were all gone, or did it even make a ripple?
Yes and no. We weren't worried about business or numbers or anything like that. We were more worried. Not even worried. It's just like, oh, well, there's opportunity. You know, there's a hole that's been created. Somebody's got to fill it. So I think everybody, you know, it felt very similar to when, like, Machine Gun and Gallows and AJ and Shinsuke, when they all left. It was very similar to that, but without the panic. But yeah, it's cool. It's cool. But I think it's going to be a very different time in wrestling. It's the next 6 months to a year to 2 years are going to be very, very, very interesting.
So you were there in that short period when, you know, Shinsuke and AJ and, you know, the Bullet Club, the original members, you know, Gallows and Anderson left.
Yeah.
You said there was a lot of panic there when that happened.
At least in my head there was. I don't know if anybody else, but I was very worried. And I heard through the grapevine that other people were worried as well. But then we ended up doing better than we ever had. The following year, we had a record-breaking G1, later that year. And we've topped it every year since. So it's just the nature of the business. People leave, they go other places, opportunity opens up, keeps things fresh.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seemed to be that way. As a newer New Japan fan, my son got me into it. You know, I'm more and more intrigued with what's going on right now. And especially, you know, with you and I guess a couple years ago, you were joined over there by someone I don't think you knew before. And you guys, I think, became friends. It looks like you were on your YouTube show, became a tag team. Talk a little bit about Juice Robinson, what he's meant to New Japan and what he's meant to you.
Juice is like big brother to me. I'm the oldest of three kids, so I was always a big brother. So he's kind of the big brother I never had. He came into the dojo. I came in April. He came in September, right after the G1. And I remember my first week of training at the dojo, he got my number from somebody. I don't know how, or who. And he was like, hey, man, this is, you know, my name's Joey. I'm coming to the New Japan Dojo, whatever, in September. What are you guys doing? What do I need to get ready for? And at that point in time, we were doing 1,000 squats a day. So I was like, dude, it's brutal. We're doing 1,000 squats a day. I'm looking forward to seeing you. Maybe. So we kind of kept in touch until September. And then he got there. And I think the most squats he ever had to do was like 300. So he was waking up, like, working in England, just doing, like, hungover, just doing as many squats as he possibly could. I think he got to 600 one time, he told me. But, yeah, our relationship is pretty silly. We like to have fun. We're always together. Our hotel rooms are usually right next to each other. We have, well, now that I'm injured, we don't, but we usually have the same schedule, too. So, yeah, we're pretty close, to say the least.
And with Juice, you started tagging a lot more and being more of kind of a solidified tag team, even though you both kind of did your singles thing. And, of course, he definitely has a single thing going on. Is that something you kind of enjoy doing, is being more of an kind of entrenched tag team in the New Japan scene?
I like doing tags. I prefer tag matches, singles matches, but I kind of want to do both as well. Juice seems to be doing a good job at being a single guy and a tag guy. And I think in New Japan is a good place to be able to do that. Like, you can do both. So I would just kind of like to move on into the singles side of things. And I feel like the New Japan Cup would have been a good time to do that, except they got pulled out. So that's a little unfortunate. I was a little bummed out about that. But, yeah.
Well, you had reason to believe that things were going to go pretty well for you in the New Japan Cup. It seemed things were moving in a positive direction.
I felt
go ahead.
Confident about it. I felt pretty. I felt like it would have been a good time to showcase what I am capable of. I feel like I don't get to do that to the full extent a whole lot. So it's just been a good platform to show everybody, hey, I'm actually good at this.
So with New Japan Wrestling, you know, with people that haven't watched a whole bunch or maybe got into it with Omega or people that aren't that familiar with it, it's different in the sense that, at least to me, there's not a whole bunch of, you know, outright angles or vignettes. A lot of the storytelling is subtle. If you were kind of selling New Japan to somebody who was more of a mainstream American wrestling fan, is there a certain way you'd describe it to them?
I would describe it as actual pro wrestling. There's not a lot of talking. You turn on the TV, you're going to get a show that's mostly pro wrestling. And I feel like you don't get that a lot. There's a lot of other stuff that goes on. Talking, whatever, videos, vignettes, what have you. And that's fine. Everybody's got their own flavor. But I think New Japan is the best pure pro wrestling you can get today.
Now, with some of these guys like Cody and people like that, they've done a good job of keeping their name out there and doing a lot of stuff, even when they're injured. Do you have a plan? Do you have things you're going to do while you're injured? Are you going to, of course, continue the YouTube show? What is it that you're going to do to fill the time while you're not wrestling in the next few months?
Well, that's kind of where I'm at right now, is figuring out what I'm going to do over the next several months. I haven't been doing the YouTube show. Mainly because it takes a lot of effort and I've got to be on my phone the entire time I'm enjoying myself, and I didn't want to do that. I'd rather actually just live my life. So I put that on pause for now. For me, I'm really just trying to not get too out of shape because all I can do at the gym right now is I can ride a bike and I can do some leg machines, so I got to stay on top of that because I was a little late to the party on trying to get into shape, and then I was doing really, really good. I was doing really, really well in wrestling also, and then the shoulder thing happened, so I kind of feel like I got the rug pulled out from under my feet. But I just got to stay on top of things and not get sad and feel pitiful for myself. So, I just got to kind of keep myself busy and have thinking days. I don't really know what I'm going to do for the next 6 months, though.
Well, you know, you're a smart, talented, funny dude. I know you're going to figure it out. And of course, before this happened, you said you felt good. You felt like you could showcase some stuff. Where were your goals at before the injury as far as what you're going to do? Because you know, you've said a couple things like, you know, you don't watch Raw. Meanwhile, you can see your dad on Raw. Your dad is works for the WWE, but it doesn't seem like that's really something you're interested in doing right now. Are you just interested in being kind of an international New Japan type wrestler? Is that your plan for the next few years?
Yeah, well, I did just sign a multi-year deal with New Japan, so I'm with them for the foreseeable future. And I was actually, funny enough, I was 23 days into my contract when I got hurt, so that ended up working out in my favor financially. But yeah, I genuinely love New Japan. I love being there. It's a great locker room. It's a great place to wrestle. The fans are great. Like, I'm honestly happy. I don't see myself leaving anytime soon, or even wanting to leave anytime soon. I'm very happy where I'm at, and I think there's still a lot of ground to be covered there.
And how's the experience been doing some Ring of Honor stuff? You know, earlier this year, you were...
Well, the few times I did it was fun. I'm Ring of Honor for now as well. But yeah, Juice started a new group called Lifeblood. Myself, Juice, Tennille Dashwood, Bandito, Mark Haskins, and Hot Sauce, Tracy Williams. So yeah, that was a fun new thing that I've never done before. I've never been in a group. So that was cool. It was also cool to see how ROH is so different from New Japan and how they run their show and everything. So it was cool to put my creative juices towards something different.
What are the main differences between New Japan and Ring of Honor as far as the way they run?
More just how they run things. New Japan is very relaxed. Like, we get to the show like 2 hours before doors open, maybe an hour before doors open. Everybody just kind of keeps themselves, does their warm up. ROH, you gotta get there like hours and hours and hours before anything even happens. That's like the main difference, really. And just kind of New Japan's way, way more chill.
And it's funny that you said that you'd never really been part of a faction before, you know, the Lifeblood with Bandito and Juice and them, you know, with New Japan, it seems like everybody's part of a faction. Was there ever any talk of bringing you into Chaos or the Bullet Club or anything like that? You seem to be a free agent out there in the narrative.
No, well, I mean, like, all the New Japan guys are like in their own like New Japan group, but it's not really a group. It's just kind of the guys that aren't in a group, I feel like.
Right.
And then, like, we had the Taguchi Japan thing, but that same thing wasn't really fully a group. Nobody ever really approached. I've never got approached about switching or being brought into anything. I've just been doing my thing, and that's it.
Well, it sounds like you're still kind of wrapping your head around the injury thing, which you're going to do the next few months, but... You know, of course, when you come back, do you have a vision in mind of, like, what is it that the next couple of years holds for David Finlay?
I have a loose idea of kind of what I want to do when I come back. Again, I've got plenty of time to come up with it, and right now I'm just kind of more putting brain power towards my surgery date, mainly because I've never had surgery before, so it's, like, nerves and... all that stuff. But I'll probably start thinking about really what I'm going to do once I can actually start doing stuff about it. Like I said, I'm stuck in limbo. But I start, like, physical therapy, like, 2 days after. So once I start working on my shoulder and working on getting better, I know my brain can start coming up with stuff. But right now, I'm just kind of taking it easy.
Well, I can't thank you enough for joining us today. And, you know, I know we're going to hear from you soon. If people want to get a hold of you, people want to get a hold of you for signings or that kind of thing, what's the best way to reach David Finlay?
You can follow me on Twitter at TheDavidFinlay. You can check me out on Instagram at SuperSuperDave. And that's pretty much how you get a hold of me. I don't really have a Facebook or anything. My DMs are open on Twitter, mainly because I get bored and people send me some weird stuff sometimes that makes zero sense. But, yeah, that's how you can get a hold of me or send me dog pictures or whatever. My Instagram is basically just me taking pictures of my dog.
Yeah, I co-host with Vince Russo, so I get the weirdest DMs all day long from people just the longest, most intricate questions you've ever even seen in your life. It's a very weird world having your DMs open on Twitter, isn't it?
It keeps me on my toes, that's for sure.
Well, man, I can't thank you enough for joining us here on Total Engagement with Matt Kuhn. And are you planning on being in Mania? Like, are you planning on being in New York in Mania weekend when Ring of Honor's there? Or are you going to just hang out in Florida?
I was going to. I still had my flight books and everything. And then I decided, since like my surgery was literally a week before, I'm probably not going to enjoy flying or being around anybody. So I'm not going to be in New York. But I know that New Japan is running Dallas, I think July 6th. They're opening the G1, which is one of my favorite shows of the year. And I am 100% coming out for that. I probably won't be clear to compete, but I will be there watching. So that's probably the next time people can see me, is there. I won't be at MSG.
Hey, real quick, we saw you wrestle in Charlotte with New Japan. What was that latest tour like, the American tour with New Japan? There was a little blowback that there weren't a lot of Japanese wrestlers on there, but you guys brought it. Was that a great experience for you?
It was, because I felt like it's probably the most pressure I felt in my career was like everyone, we had this awesome, like, hey, we're doing our first tour in America. And then all the people that everyone wanted to see weren't able to come. So the pressure was kind of on us to go, all right, well, you got to send everybody home happy, which I like that pressure. I like going like, all right, there's a lot of expected of me here. And I think everybody brought that attitude. And everybody was like, all right, we're making sure that we're going to do everything to the best of our ability. And the crowd was great. We didn't feel like they were bitter or anything. Like, they came, they had fun, we had fun, and it was honestly one of my favorite tours.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun for us, and you guys really brought it. And this has been fun for everybody listening, I'm sure. Reach out to David Finley at the David Finley on Twitter. Dave, thanks for joining us this week, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, man.
Total Engagement. So there you go. All around nice guy, fourth generation wrestler, guy with a huge upside and a huge future who might not have his head wrapped around the fact that he just got injured, but willing to talk to us, willing to talk to you. What an awesome dude for doing that. Thank you, David. And we're all rooting for you, and we're going to check up on you, and we're going to have you back soon, because I think this is a bandwagon you might want to get on. Total Engagement. Now, speaking of bandwagons, WrestleMania is coming up. Now, I'm not even sure if that segue works, but we're going to do it anyway. And with WrestleMania season coming up, I'm going to give you some pro tips on how to deal with WrestleMania weekend if you're traveling to New York, or if you plan on traveling to a future WrestleMania. This will be Matthew and mine's sixth year in a row, sixth Mania in a year. I don't think we'll miss another one. Hopefully, as he gets older, as he turns 18, I hope we can continue to do this, because it's always been a lot of fun. And I always think about that 10-year-old I took to his first Mania, and now he's a 16-year-old kid who's like, hey, Dad, it's still pretty awesome. Here is my advice. Here are my pro tips for WrestleMania weekend. If you're going to Mania itself, it's outdoors. You might be sitting outdoors for a long time. So something I like to do is maybe once you get in, because you kind of get there early, because the lines are always ridiculous. It's not very well organized usually to get in, and you're standing out in the sun for a long time. So once you get in, if the matches haven't started yet, don't stay at your seat. Find a restaurant or a place you can sit down, anywhere you can sit down. One year, Matthew and I just kind of sat down in the concourse and just chilled and ate our food there, just to stay out of the sun, because you're sitting there for a long time. And speaking of sitting there for a long time, you might be there for two meals. So a good idea is to eat a nice, big, hearty lunch before you get there, right before you get there. And then you can get a snack in a couple hours, and then you only have to spend money on dinner later on, instead of not thinking about it and getting lunch and dinner. And believe me, I have done that. Another cool thing about WrestleMania weekend, if you have kids, stay at the WrestleCon Hotel. Wherever WrestleCon is, that hotel is pretty awesome, especially if you have kids, because there's wrestlers everywhere. It's a lot of fun. You'll bump into wrestlers on the elevator and you know, at the checkout desk. It's kind of a cool experience to let you know that you're at Mania weekend. I also never miss the WrestleCon Super Show. The WrestleCon Super Show is one of the highlights of the weekend. We have not missed one since our second Mania that we went to. And we have seen just some amazing stuff from Will Ospreay and Marty Scurll's first match in the U.S. to Team Ricochet versus Team Ospreay in a 5-on-5 match, including a dance-off with Drew McIntyre. WrestleCon Super Show is a great time. I would not miss that. If you can go, you should go to that show. Also, WrestleCon, if you've never been to a convention, WrestleCon's a lot of fun. Every wrestler you can possibly think of in the entire world is there. And it's definitely worth the price of admission. And then be selective about your autographs. And then lastly is be prepared to walk. New York City is the city I think we walked the most in, even though they have all kinds of public transportation there. Be ready to walk. Plan out your day. Don't be afraid to Uber instead of taking the subway. Ubering, to me, is a lot better, and it's not that much more expensive, and the subways can get really hot. That being said, if you're staying in Manhattan and you're going to something at the Barclays Center, you're better off taking that subway. The subway goes pretty much straight there, pretty much straight back. It's about a 30-minute ride, way cheaper than Uber. But plan out your day, and most importantly, have fun at WrestleMania weekend.
Total engagement.
So now coming up is what I'm sure is going to be the highlight of the show for many of you. Part two of our interview with Conrad Thompson. We had part one last week. It made a lot of news. It got covered everywhere because he broke news about The Undertaker and about how he felt about Vince McMahon maybe reacting to his news of Undertaker. Conrad says he doesn't think it was on Vince's radar, but it was interesting to hear. And of course, confirming and breaking the story about Conrad Thompson doing a podcast with the great Jim Ross. Now, I have tried to get Jim Ross as a guest, and he did tell me that he might be available in April. So I'm looking forward to possibly having him in the future. But coming up now, Conrad talks about a lot of things, including how to be successful at podcasting, as well as how I almost killed his dog, and also why I got kicked out or quit or pretty much was exorcised from a group chat that we were in, and why it involved an ECW original. So with all those sordid details and more, here is Conrad Thompson.
Total engagement.
Outside of this winning format, this format that many people, including myself, have tried to copy, it's something you and I have talked about a lot, is the co-host and the role of the co-host and why what you do works. Can you put that into a few words for all those people out there who are trying to be the next Conrad Thompson? What is it that you bring? What is your philosophy as a co-host on these shows that make them so successful?
Well, first of all, I don't think anybody should ever aspire to be the next Conrad Thompson. That's ridiculous. Really, all of my success, or whatever you want to call what I'm doing now, is because I don't belong to be interviewed here. I'm supposed to be asking the questions, not answering. But I say all that to say, I don't think that the work can be underestimated. Like, I know what we're going to talk about before we click record. And I know there is an old school approach to wrestling. Oh, we just call it in the ring. That's not going to work. They never just air Monday Night Raw. There's always an idea of here's where we're going and here's where the breaks are. And that's not just with wrestling. That's with every form of entertainment, every good radio show too. Now, does that not mean that you can't be loose enough where if something organic happens that you shouldn't double down on it? No, of course you got to allow yourself that flexibility. But there is a lot more time and effort and energy that goes into my shows before we click record. And at that point, it's just sort of fun and easy. And if you're not willing to put in the time before you click record, you should have realistic expectations of what your returns are going to be. I mean, I think you've got to work really hard at producing a show that you will find interesting. And I think sometimes with the strict, wrestler only podcast, the one man shows, they've been doing something. They've been in that entertainment business for so long that they sort of think it's like Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come, and right, people are paying to hear me talk. Well, that's not really the case. Like, sometimes it's not good. And so I always look for, hey, would I listen to this? Because I'm a wrestling fan. I'm just a fan. But I, as a fan, know I would listen to this or I would not. I would be compelled by this. I would be intrigued by this or I would not. On name value alone, people would listen to the Ric Flair show. They'd try it. They'd check it out. But they're going to come back only if it's good. So, you know, if a new restaurant pops up in town and it has a big reputation from the other parts of the country where it's existed, you know, like Vic and Anthony's is one of my favorite restaurants, and they've got a handful of spots. And if they were going to open one in Huntsville, you're darn right I'd go. I love Vic and Anthony's. But if I go and it's not good, I don't know that I'm going back. So, I mean, I can still appreciate Vic and Anthony's and the other towns I've went to, and it was great, meaning maybe Ric Flair was my favorite wrestler, and I'll listen to his podcast because of that. But if it's not any good, I'm not going to listen a second week. It won't be must-listen info. And nobody was really clamoring for a Brother Love podcast or a Tony Schiavone podcast or another Eric Bischoff podcast. But the show was good. So as a result, people came back. And I think that's your job as a co-host, is to not be the star, but to be the fan, the first listener, and try to format the show and steer the show in a direction that you find will, or that you believe would be interesting as a listener. And to know that the show isn't about you, meaning a lot of times I will ask a question or bring up a subject or a topic where I already know the answer, or I've talked about it specifically with this person either on the air or off the air before. But it's not just me trying to get my information. It's a matter of me trying to inform the listener. So the show is not for me. The show is for the listener. But I am one of them. But just because I've heard a story doesn't mean that everybody has. So I've got to frame it as such. That would be my advice.
Well, that's great advice. It's advice you've given me, advice I try to take. There's, you know, Conrad, who to me is probably the best businessman I've ever known. You know, you give great advice. You've given me great advice that's actually helped my real life business. But there's also Conrad the fan, you know, the guy who on some level has to be affected somewhat when he hears that Vince is affected by him. And the fact that you're booking The Undertaker, how does 36 or 37 year old Conrad, the businessman, kind of balance these things with Conrad the fan getting to do these things that maybe a lot of people can only dream about? Is that something you have to reconcile sometimes?
Yeah, yes and no. You know, I don't take time to, and I get asked this question a lot. Do you ever just think about what you've accomplished? And it's like, what do you mean? I have Skype and I record a phone call with a guy in Texas or a guy in Georgia or a guy in Wyoming. And then, you know, we talk shit about it on social media. That's the formula. It's not like these magic beans. I just had a concept for, hey, here's how we can build an audience, and then here's how we can monetize it and generate revenue. And at that point, it really did become more about, hey, what are people into, and what are they buying, and what's hot, and, you know, what's not. And once you identify what's hot and what's not, do more of what's working and less of what's not. And it doesn't, you know, I'm doing so much at this point that it all just sort of runs together. So when somebody comes and says on social media, hey, what episode did you talk about so-and-so? Man, I don't remember. That could have been last week or 3 years ago, because as soon as I click stop on the recorder, that episode's done. I'm going to the next one. I don't have any time to waste. And, you know, which is funny because I sometimes hold guys' feet to the fire. Like, how do you not remember this? And it's from some fucking random Nitro in 1997.
Right.
And I don't remember what I talked about last Sunday with right. Tony, because it all just runs together because I've done so much. So I'm sympathetic to that. But the idea that, you know, don't get me wrong, the fan in me really gets excited when you think about what it meant to be a part of that rally for AEW in Jacksonville when Chris Jericho sort of jumped ship. And I was the last person at the podium before he was there. Dude, that didn't make any fucking sense. Like, how in the world did I get here? So there are times where I just look around and I'm like, is this real life right now? Like, is this really happening? Right. Why am I here? I've never been to broadcast school. I'm a big, fat, bearded dude. I have a hillbilly redneck accent. I'm not supposed to be up here. And so parts of me in those big moments where you look back and you think, man, this is going to be a big deal. And, you know, little stuff. Like somebody told me the other day that my name was printed in Pro Wrestling Illustrated. They did like a recap for the year and they mentioned StarCast and they put my name in there. And I was like, wow, the kid version of me would have thought that was like the coolest thing ever. but there's really no time to sit and think about it because I'm just working on the next thing. But again, Vince McMahon, he may know my name, but he wouldn't know me if I walked in. And I mean, I've been on his network 13 times, but there's no chance he would remember or know who I was if he met me again for the third time.
I think something that appeals to you is the creative outlet for you. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, listen, the most fun thing to me, and I know that people really talk about my business acumen, and you always tout me as a business person, blah, blah, blah. But I do believe that people enjoy, or me, I'm driven by creating things. So to see something start at absolute zero, and then like Something to Wrestle started at absolute zero, and then it built to millions of downloads a month. And then we did t-shirts, and then we did live shows, and then we did the network show. And, you know, then Bruce parlayed all of that into a booking gig with TNA, and then was producing for MLW. And we did the European tour, and now he's back with WWE. And, oh, by the way, we did a convention. And all of that really spun off of a conversation on a couch where I said, hey, man, I got an idea. And we just created something from absolute zero. And the format was a hit, and the revenue model was a hit. So that part is the most rewarding and the most fun. Now, that being said, creating is fun, but what keeps people doing it is money. And, you know, you could convince anybody, hey, you want to do something fun, but even the most fun thing eventually becomes a little less fun, and it starts to feel more like work. If I was just to say, hey, man, let's get together and hang out sometime and talk wrestling, hey, that's great. Everybody would want to do that. Now, if I said, let's do it for 3 hours a week every Wednesday night at 9. Okay, that starts to feel and seem a little bit more like a job. So if I need this to be sustainable, there's got to be revenue attached to it, which is my advice to any new podcaster. I suspect you've got people who listen to this show who want to be a podcaster. Your idea ain't worth shit unless you've got something that makes money. And I know that that is the harsh reality and nobody wants to talk about it. But I get pitches all the time that say, hey, man, I got a great idea for a podcast. And my number one question is, how do you make money with this? And if they say, I don't know, my next piece of advice is figure it out and then get back with me. I'm happy to help anybody, by the way. I'm at Hey, It's Conrad on Twitter. Be happy to help you. But you've got to figure out how to turn your idea into a business if you're planning to attract a big name. Because that's the thing people always assume, is they assume that, well, you know, Conrad was already successful in real life, or Conrad, you know, was friendly with Ric Flair, or dating this person or that person. And no, none of that mattered. You had to have, I mean, are you married to Vince Russo's daughter? Did I miss that?
No, not at all.
So you approached him with a business idea and a plan and a strategy that said, hey, here's how we can monetize this, and here's what the business model would look like. And once you had a real business, now it can go execute. So your idea needs to turn into a business somehow. And if you don't have that, you're going to have trouble sustaining the show, in my opinion. I think that's the reason you've seen so many shows start and then so many shows go away, because they never generated, you know, significant revenue, which is also another reason why Something to Wrestle is not dead already. The idea that Vince has hired Bruce back and Something to Wrestle even had one more episode tells you more about the podcast and the revenue it generated than it does about Bruce's new position.
What you said earlier about Bruce, the perception of him, the perception of Tony Schiavone, the perception of Eric Bischoff, and now Jim Ross, you said that the narrative has changed. For you, was that an unintended consequence, or was that something you personally wanted to bring out people? Did you want people to see the real Tony Schiavone? Did you want people to appreciate Bruce Pritchard maybe in a way that he hadn't been appreciated?
Not necessarily just wanting that for them, but I think it's, I mean, listen, it's a smart business play. You know, like, for instance, we've seen certain wrestling characters, right? So we've seen the Ringmaster with Steve Austin. Well, that's not really who Steve Austin was. He was closer to, in real life, Stone Cold Steve Austin than he was the Ringmaster. He was closer to Stone Cold Steve Austin than he was Stunning Steve Austin. So once he was able to really just be more of himself, and he used to describe that character as saying, you know, the best characters in wrestling are just you with the volume turned up. Well, I mean, really, Bruce Pritchard never had a chance to let everybody know who he was. I mean, you read about him a lot and you heard people bury him in shoot interviews, but that was his job. You know, a lot of the years Bruce was in the heat position where people were going to not be happy with what he said he did because he was just carrying out orders from somebody else who sometimes didn't want to take the heat. So therefore, that's your job. And if Vince and Bruce were going to play good cop, bad cop, Bruce wasn't ever the good cop. He was always the guy delivering the bad news. But that was what his job entailed. And with Tony Schiavone, Tony had to get on the air and act like people were really fucking excited about an Evan Courageous match. And he knows he wasn't, and he knew we weren't. But that was his job, to pretend to be excited about that. And, you know, I just felt like those guys were more entertaining than they were given credit for. I mean, in real life, Bruce Pritchard was cracking up me, all of my friends and family, with his ability to tell stories and do silly impressions. And nobody knew that side of his personality. And nobody knew Tony Schiavone to be the Bob Saget of professional wrestling. I think MSL from MLW is the first person who said that, but it is the most apt description I've ever heard, because we sort of grew up with him as our TV dad. And so, you know, we just have this perception of Tony Schiavone, and then you have a conversation with him in real life and you realize, well, he is nothing like that at all. And that made for an entertaining and compelling podcast. So, yeah, I knew people would get to see their real personality, and I thought it would change the way they thought of them. But more importantly, I thought it would make for a good show.
With StarCast coming up, of course, Memorial Day weekend in Vegas, and of course everyone knows it's side-by-side with the All Elite Double or Nothing event, you pulled out a big, you know, a big one with Undertaker. Do you have any other big surprises waiting for us for StarCast?
My biggest event has not yet been announced, and I won't announce it for a little while, but we do have some other big names coming in as well. But there is one event that I'm holding in my back pocket that we're not revealing yet that people are going to be talking about. And in my opinion, it's much bigger than an Undertaker meet and greet. Don't get me wrong. It's cool that we've got that, and I'm not trying to downplay that at all. Well, I could not tell you how thrilled I am that he accepted and was willing to come out and do it. And that the WWE has allowed it, because clearly, you know, he's contracted and they could yank it if they wanted to, I assume. I cannot express to you the excitement about the event that we haven't yet announced, but it's coming, and it's going to be Friday night, the night before Double or Nothing. Thursday night, we've got what I think is one of the coolest things we've ever done, which will be Jim Ross sitting down and watching an old Steamboat Flair match from 1989 with Steamboat and Flair. We'll have the actual robe from one of those matches in 89. We'll have the actual belt they contested for. Those guys will do alternate commentary on the match, just talk about their rivalry, do some Q&As, but a deep dive on one of the five-star classics that people are talking about 30 years later is just a hallmark event, and I'm so thrilled to have it there. And then we've got, you know, lots of fun stuff, a one-man show with Sting, a one-man show with Bret Hart, a panel on Remembering Brian Pillman, a live talk is Jericho, another big event I haven't yet announced for Sunday, which will have a lot of people talking. We're premiering the Joey Ryan documentary. I know Joey's been on this show before, but the Friday night event is going to be something that everyone in wrestling is talking, not just wrestling, people in the mainstream will be talking about.
We'll definitely look forward to that. Conrad, I can't thank you enough for your time, dude. And like I was going to say earlier, I want to thank you personally for everything you've done for me to get me in this position. I really appreciate all the advice and everything you've done. And thank you for joining us today. Thank you so much.
Hang on now. You said thank you for putting in this position. Are you thanking me for you killing 24 podcasts single-handedly?
Yes.
I mean, I'm wondering if I'm even going to be able to podcast successfully when I hang up with you today, because so far you've killed Terry Runnels, you've killed Medusa, you've killed Dutch Mantel, you've killed Robbie E. I mean, I don't even know how many others there are, but I mean, oh, Johnny Fairplay. Just there's so many. You yourself are the Undertaker of wrestling podcasts. Like, it's just tombstone after tombstone.
I think you told me once that Bray Wyatt is the eater of worlds. I'm the eater of podcasts.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's still accurate, because seriously, like, by the time you actually air this one, you probably would have killed another podcast.
Well, you know, I'm working on the Russo one. So, you know, you never know.
Realistically, how many episodes do you think that's got left?
Six.
Okay. I was gonna say, not based on your relationship with Russo, just If we take all your podcasts together, divide it out, see what the average number of episodes are, we got to be winding down. And if I'm a guest on one of these shows, I mean, this show I'm on right now, what's it got? 2-3 more episodes and then we're done.
Yeah, probably. But I'm trying to reverse the tide. I think you have enough chutzpah and enough gravitas to reverse the tide of my bad luck with podcasts.
No, I don't know if I do. I don't know. I mean, especially since you got kicked out of the group. Are we going to talk about how you got kicked out of the group here on the show today?
You're free to talk about it if you'd like to.
Yeah, so what exactly is the beef with you and Jeff Jones?
So the beef with me and Jeff Jones was, if we're going to talk about it, it really started with us. I think it started with me and him kind of flexing on each other. And then I know for myself, when that happens, I tend to overreact and say some things I don't mean. And I think I said some things I can't take back. And then once I started working with Russo, it was nonstop from Jeff. And then I lost my temper. I think that's what happened. Would you say that's accurate?
I don't know. I just know that Jeff Jones is, I mean, he's turned full-blown heel. I mean, he's kicking dudes out of it. I'm just thankful. It's my group. I started the group, and I'm asking permission to him every day to comment in the group. Like, am I still allowed? Am I still welcome in here? Because, yeah, he's put the boots to you and a few others. And I don't know. It's just weird to me that I used to talk to you 48 times a day, and now you start this podcast with Russo, and now we're frenemies, I guess. I don't know, because you don't call anymore. You don't text anymore.
Well, you know,
it's not the same.
It was weird getting kicked out of the group chat. I'll be honest with you. It was weird. And
wait, hang on.
Go ahead.
Well, you didn't get kicked out. You left. I was being a smartass.
Right. So what happened is I made a play to kick Jeff out, and then I saw that I didn't have the support, and then I overplayed my hand quite a bit, and. And I bore the consequence of it, but I will say that Jeff is someone I used to pay money to see. You know, I would see Jeff when he was with Mike Awesome. You know, and I have a lot of respect for what he's done, and the fact that he doesn't like me is understandable, because I think when we had our disagreement, I said some things that I wish I didn't and that I didn't mean, and I would pass along my apologies to him through you, but I think you would probably just tell him I told him to fuck himself or something.
Yeah, and specifically, he wanted me to tell you that he had Ring of Honor and NXT tickets, and they came in envelopes that weren't empty. So, dude, what's going on? Like, is everything you touch just fucking snake bit right now?
You know, it's hard being Matt Kuhn, man. You gotta really work on overcoming being Matt Kuhn on a full time basis, man. It's not.
Didn't you know when that guy told Hancock that he had the presidential suite at Bellagio for my bachelor party, and then you guys get there and literally they've never heard of him? Wasn't that like a sign that you shouldn't send that guy money?
I didn't know that was him. I had no idea that was him, because I got
until I just said that just now.
No. Hancock told me like a couple weeks ago. He goes, "Oh yeah, that's the guy." I did not know that was the same dude, but it's something I probably talked about earlier on this episode. But the thing is that the guy had like 40,000 Twitter followers. He's got a lot of people following him that I respect. He had tickets for sale. I bought the tickets, and then came the stories. And you know, I guess I don't want to live in a world where I have to be that diligent, because it all sounded legit to me. But at the same time, you know, I'm out. Tickets to NXT and Ring of Honor. And I'm sure Jeff does have the hookup for those. And I'll tell you something funny, Conrad. Matthew and I were watching Sopranos, and we saw the episode where Chris Moltisanti kills Adriana's dog. And I had to tell Matthew that I almost did that to your dog.
No, it's true. In my office, you nearly killed. And here's the best part. It's not even my dog. It's Megan's dog. And then it really is identical to that scene, because I would have had to explain that this fucking ogre sat on her dog. It would have been a sad day, but I'm glad that you're off the heroin and you didn't sit on the dog. Oh, wrong movie. Either way, I appreciate you having me on, man, and best of luck with this podcast and the 14 others you're going to start, and I hope that one day you'll be nice to Jeff Jones so you can be back in the group. But I'm glad that we were finally able to get some closure there, that you tried to kick him out and it didn't work, so you just left.
Yeah, it was embarrassing, and I have no friends, so there you go.
But you had like 12 in that group, by the way.
I know.
And now
my life is full of regrets. You know, my life is.
Well, hey, let's go ahead and officially announce. I've gotten some tweets about whether or not Matt Coon is coming to StarCast. Yes, Matt's coming to StarCast. He's my friend, and he'll be there. Will one of his piece of shit podcasts be there? Probably not. None of them will even exist by then. But Matt will be there, and he'll be at Double or Nothing. And really, most of that is because I like Matthew. But those are details.
And there you have it. The sordid details, as well as some really great stuff from Conrad. Smartest dude I know. You might want to listen to him if you want to get into podcasting. And if you're a human being on this planet in 2019, you probably already have a podcast. And that is it for Total Engagement this week. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll have a lot of cool stuff coming up next week. Make sure to visit us on Twitter at Matt Coon with a K. T-E, and follow me on Twitter at Matt Coon Music. We're going to have a ton more stuff coming up next week. Thanks, guys, for listening from one fan to another on Total Engagement with Matt Coon.